Chapter 50. Sing. This is exactly the kind of recklessness that has been underlying the transport union since its inception, Carrie Fisk said. Her face was flushed, her gestures sharp, and her voice had the buzz of rage behind every word. Her blouse was tan with black, and she wore the green armband that had come to symbolize anti-terrorist solidarity among those loyal to Laconia and High Consul Duarte. The Union claimed that stability and safety were their primary mandate. That was the whole point of letting it administrate Ringspace. But the minute someone arrives with the power to question that, bombings, theft, murder, the hypocrisy is mind-boggling. It's unreal. The interviewer was a young man apparently well-known in Sol's system and on Medina. Singh watched the man nod and stroke his chin like an ancient sage considering a deep, mystical truth. His seriousness made Fisk look even more formidable. "And would you say the situation is stabilized now?" he asked. "We can hope it is," Fisk said as she shook her head no. "When I look at the patience that the present administration has shown to us and the violence with which it was answered, it leaves me, not angry even, embarrassed. We called ourselves a civilization, and this thuggery is all we have to offer. I can only hope that the people who were fooled into thinking any of this could be justified are embarrassed too." It was a sentence Singh had written himself and delivered to Fisk. She repeated it now, as if it were an off-the-cuff thought, and she made it sound mostly convincing. Of all the things he had done since he'd come to Medina, Fisk and the Laconian Congress of Worlds was by far the most successful. Everything else, moving up the timetable for the Tempest's transit to Sol system, flushing out the underground, managing Medina Station, was tainted. The catastrophe had lasted 5¾ hours from the launch of James Holden's ship to the restoration of full function to Medina Station. In that time, his best informant and the team sent to back him had been slaughtered. The station's external sensors had been compromised, the Laconian Marine forces neutralized, the detention centers broken open, and 52 prisoners lost and not yet recovered. 20 Union ships had transited through no one knew which gate or gates, and the gathering storm had been boarded and hijacked. It was, without exception, the greatest failure of security Singh had ever heard of, and as governor of Medina Station, he had spent almost the whole time hiding in a public toilet. Humiliation sat in his belly like a stone, and he had the distinct sense that it would remain there forever. Every decision he had made since he'd arrived at Medina returned to him in the light of his failure, and he considered each of them like a wound in his skin. If he had treated the local population with greater caution from the first, would Kasich have lived? If he had chosen to respond to the assassination attempt with a more focused response, would the underground have gained fewer followers and allies? If he had avoided the confusion of restructuring his security forces by retaining Tanaka, would they have exposed the underground in time to prevent this? The list seemed to go on forever. And each choice he'd made, sending the storm out despite Davenport warning him it was undercrewed, shipping James Holden to Laconia instead of questioning him more deeply about the underground, encouraging Trejo and the Tempest to move the timetable forward for the transit into Sol system, had led him here. So, on some level, each of them had been wrong. No matter how wise they had seemed at the time, how forgivable and subtle his failures of judgment had been, the final evidence was unmistakable. He had treated the people of Medina as though he were their leader, instead of their warden, instead of their zookeeper. And they had paid him back with violence, death, and dishonor. All of that was a given now. There was no standing apart from the failure. It had happened on his watch, and so it was his problem to fix. And it didn't apply only to Medina. He saw that now. His mandate was to coordinate the empire from this, its hub. And that would mean crushing the underground, wherever it had fled. Wherever it emerged from the fresh dung heap of the Union's demise. He'd thought of Medina as a station to run, a logistical heart to sustain the glorious future for humanity. He'd been mistaken. His system chirped a connection request. He checked himself in the monitor, smoothed his hair, and straightened his tunic. He was done looking less than knife sharp. These were, after all, the first days of his career's rehabilitation. He accepted the request. A woman's face appeared on the screen, a small identifier hovering above her to say who and what she was to him. "Lieutenant Guillemette," he said crisply. "Rear Admiral Song of the Eye of the Typhoon is requesting command to command, Governor." "Of course," he said. The monitor flickered. He straightened his tunic again and felt immediately self-conscious that he'd done it. It was a sign of insecurity, even if he was the only one who knew about it. Rear Admiral Song appeared. Her wide mouth was set in a polite smile. The light delay was almost trivial. Evidence that the typhoon was on track to pass through the gate. "Governor Singh," she said, "it's good to see you."
"Likewise," he replied.
"We're on approach to the ring gate," Song said, then looked away. "I'm very sorry, but given everything that's happened recently, I have to ask you this. Can you assure me that this transit is safe?" Singh settled more deeply into his couch. "Of course it is," floated at the back of his mouth. "The typhoon can come through the gate, and there won't be any rogue ship zipping through some other gate in the seconds before to change the safety curve. You and your crew will survive the trip and take its place as the protector of the ring space." He swallowed the words. It was like another fine cut on his soul to admit that he wasn't certain. "I have no new security alerts," he said. "We see no ships on approach through the other gates and have no reason to suspect any interference from fringe elements. But if you would like, I will consult with my chief of security to make certain we have done everything in our ability to minimize your risk."
"I would appreciate that," Song said, and her tone meant, "I'm sorry to ask it."
"The safety of your ship and your crew are the most important thing," Singh said. "I understand your caution." "I'll match orbit with the gate until we hear from you," Song said. "And thank you, Governor. I do appreciate this." He nodded and dropped the connection. She didn't trust him. Of course she didn't. He didn't trust himself. The Marines who accompanied him on his review of the docks were a mixed group, half of them in power armor and half in standard ballistic plates. Even if the underground managed to disable the power armor again, which Overstreet had assured Singh would be impossible, there would still be a guard ready to take point. Singh hated that they'd had to change their protocol. He hated remembering the fear of realizing his protection was gone, and he hated knowing that the fear would never completely go away. He still didn't know how the underground had even known the anti-mutiny protocols existed, much less how they'd managed to reverse engineer them. Was someone a Laconian, a turncoat? Had they been careless? He had no way of finding where the information had leaked out. It was another little insult that burrowed into his skin. He maneuvered through the docks on a small thruster of compressed air. The empty berth stared back at him like an accusation. The pocks in the decks and bulkheads where bullets had struck during the fighting
hadn't been buffed out or painted over yet, though they would be. He felt the attention of the dock workers. They were, after all, the audience for this excursion, meant to see that the governor of the station wasn't cowering in his office, afraid to peek out from behind his desk, that he wasn't hiding in a public restroom. The heavy guard undercut the message, as did the fear in his gut. But he would pretend and pretend and pretend in the hopes that it would somehow become true. So he lifted his chin and made his way through the full round of the docks, even where the damage from the bombing of the primary oxygen tanks twisted and deformed the deck. He looked at the temporary plating with what he hoped was dignity and thoughtfulness. All he really wanted was to be done with this and back in his office. The acting dockmaster followed along just behind him. The anger in her expression was unmistakable, but he didn't know if it was rage at the terrorists who'd done the damage or at him for not preventing it. "How long will it take us to make repairs?" he asked. "That will depend on the supply chain, sir," she said. "Once we have the typhoon, they should be able to get started in earnest, but they've been breaking more than we have the decking to replace." "It's heartbreaking," he said, because he didn't know what else to say. She didn't respond. "What is our capacity at this point?" "It's not bad. The only berth that took serious damage was the first. Sheared off the docking clamps. Once that old gunship was out, the bastards took over my office. All the rest were released from the controls. That's one way it could have been worse, I suppose." What if he'd brought Natalia, and the monster had been here? Laconians had died in these uprisings. If his family had come to Medina, would they have been targets too? Would he have watched his daughter die the way he'd watched Kasich? And yes, locals suffered too, but to have his people dead and hurt, and with what repercussions? The criminals had scattered like seeds on the wind and taken his ship with them. What colony would see these images and not think that they could do the same? He pushed over to the broken decking and put his hands on it. He'd been weak before, lenient. He'd thought that by treating the people of Medina as if they were citizens of the Empire, they would be transformed somehow, they would be civilized. The decking was half a meter thick and twisted like a torn leaf. They'd been willing to do this, and he'd pretended he could treat them as if they were sane. Another of his mistakes. He had hesitated to wield his power before, and the universe had taught him what rewards hesitation brought. Well, he'd learned his lesson. "Thank you. I understand now," he said, possibly to the acting dockmaster, possibly to something deeper in his own soul. He turned to her. "This won't happen again." This was what they were building toward, Overstreet said. The bad news is they were by and large quite successful in their aim. "I'm not going to make this pretty, sir. They trounced us." "I agree," Singh said. Overstreet leaned forward in his chair and threw the image from his wrist monitor to the screen over Singh's desk. A list of all the people presently unaccounted for in Medina. The people that they knew had escaped or died. "On the other hand," Overstreet said, "their objective was defensive. This was a retreat. I've had the technicians make a complete audit, and I'm prepared to certify that it's safe for the typhoon to make its transit." "You're sure about that? Completely safe?" "I think we've established that perfect knowledge isn't possible in this context. But in order to pull off this last series of attacks, the underground had to spend a tremendous amount of its resources and capital on Medina. If they'd stayed here, they could have used the same knowledge of the station and agents within the civilian population to protract the struggle here for months, maybe years. Instead, they burned it all in one day. So, this was a good thing? Singh said. No, Overstreet said. But it was all the bad things they could throw at us at once. I feel confident that they didn't hold anything back. So, however bad this looks, and it looks very bad, we're going to end with Medina carrying a smaller insurgent population with fewer resources at their disposal, and the main body of the underground scattered to the colonial systems. The colonies, Singh said. Yes. The loss of the storm, well, that's not inconsiderable. If we hadn't pulled most of the crew off to assist with other operations, or if your XO had scuttled the ship once it was clear they couldn't repel the borders. Talk to me about the colonies, Singh said. Overstreet blinked his two blue eyes in something like confusion. Sir? The colonies, Singh said. That's where the terrorists have gone. That's where the next wave of this will take place, yes? That matches my analysis, sir. So how we proceed here should be considered in light of the colonies. We should examine how likely they are to cooperate with the enemy, and how we can affect those decisions. Yes, sir. An example needs to be made. Something that not only restores confidence in the safety of Medina and the gate network, but displays what Laconian civilization stands for, what we believe, what we are willing to do to ensure our control over this situation. Overstreet was silent for a moment. Singh paged through the lists of the missing, the faces of the enemy. There were pages of them, but not uncountably many. This was still a solvable problem. What exactly are we willing to do, sir? Overstreet asked, and his tone told Singh that he knew what was coming. A white list, Singh said. I would like you to identify the people who we are certain are not involved with the insurgency. The people we know absolutely that we can trust. And the others? Singh closed the image down. The enemy vanished. An example has to be made. Overstreet went very still. For a moment, the only sound was the hum of the air recyclers. I see, Overstreet said. So, a step up from counterinsurgency. It's been justified. The official position of the High Council is that these are all Laconian citizens. That the terrorists are Laconian citizens who are also criminals. I know, Singh said. But I also know that I was placed in command of Medina to learn from practice what theory can never teach. And this is the lesson that James Holden and his friends have taught me. Will you refuse to respect the chain of command? Overstreet chuckled at that. Singh didn't know why. No, sir. I will follow the chain of command, as is my duty. Good. Please prepare the cull, then. I will trust your judgment on who best belongs on the white list. Yes, sir, Overstreet said. Only I have other orders, sir. A thrill of confusion moved up Singh's spine. Other orders? From whom? Standing orders I received from Colonel Tanaka when I accepted this position. So ultimately, from Admiral Trejo. You see, sir, the High Council made it very clear to Admiral Trejo that the rule of the Empire is permanent. And if history shows us anything, it's that people hold grudges for generations. Whole societies have lived and died because of their antipathy born out of events that happened generations before. Or maybe things that got so mythologized They were just pissed off about stories of things that never happened in the first place. The Admiral was adamant that we hold ourselves to a higher standard, as we always have. Overstreet spread his hands in a gesture that meant, "What can you do?" His right hand held a gun. Singh felt his heart catch, and then stumble like it was running down a hill. "May I ask what your orders are?" "I'm to set an example, sir. Restore confidence in the safety of Medina and the gate network, and display what Laconian civilization stands for, including that we who have accepted the burden of government hold ourselves and each other to the highest possible standard." Singh stood. His legs felt weak. This wasn't possible. This wasn't happening. "But I was loyal," he said. "I've obeyed. You've given me an order to kill Laconian citizens who have not been found guilty of a crime. But for what it's worth, I don't disagree with you. These people are scum. They don't deserve or understand what we've brought them. For me, I think they never will. But their children might. Their grandchildren or their great-grandchildren. The story of Medina will be that Governor Singh mismanaged the station, lost his ship to a band of malcontents, lost his perspective. And when he let his wounded pride exceed the mandates of the High Council's directives, he was removed for the protection of the everyday citizens in his care. You see the difference? If you kill an insurgent, you're the enemy of all their friends, all their family. And then there's an expectation, precedent, enemies for generations, forever. If you kill your own, even the highest among your own, to protect someone powerless, they remember that too. It sows gratitude. It sows trust. Generations from now, your sacrifice will lead to the peace, prosperity, and fellow feeling among all humanity. The air was gone. He couldn't catch his breath. His mind rejected everything he'd heard. He was going to see Natalia again. He was going to hold the monster in his arms and hear her gabble on about school and the dream she'd had and whether they could get a pet for their apartment. All of that was still true. It couldn't have changed. Not so quickly. Not so finally. "Plus, it'll put Governor Song on notice," Overstreet said. He stood. "I'm very sorry about this, but it could be worse. You could be going to the pen." He lifted the gun. "Wait," Singh said. "Wait. Do you believe all that? About what killing me is supposed to achieve?" "I am an officer of the Laconian Empire, Governor Singh. I believe what I'm told to believe."